Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 147, recorded Monday, December 17th, 2018. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: holiday travel tips and notes on Santa Fe. So coming to you today from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, trying to wind down the year's travel, was in Santa Fe, New Mexico for Thanksgiving, then headed up to Las Vegas the next week for Amazon Web Services' big annual conference, the reInvent conference. And then did what I hoped was my last trip to Dallas, but we couldn't quite sort of corral all the cats. So I'm back down there this Wednesday, this week, for what will definitely be my last trip of the year. Irene and I flew out to Albuquerque 10 a.m. Thanksgiving morning. And I've got to say that it was one of the least stressful travel experiences I've ever had. No traffic on the drive to O'Hare, no lines. I didn't even have time to pull out my driver's license before I hit the TSA podium. I then walked straight through to the screening line. There were agents hanging around, quite honestly, just looking for people to screen. I mean, the only line I stood in was the Starbucks line. I mean, we even scored first class upgrades. The plane was only half full. I think we even left the ground early. It was just an incredibly pleasant change from what had been the normal for my O'Hare to DFW commute. Actually, the only real downside I noticed was when we hit the Hertz President's Club aisle in Albuquerque. Thanksgiving Day, it was pretty picked over. I mean, and so people had kind of left behind this really odd selection of Dodge vehicles, which, you know, going way back, Hertz was always kind of primarily a Ford place, but whereas Avis was the GM place and sort of Budget was the Chrysler place. But here in Albuquerque on Thanksgiving midday, it was all Dodge. The choice was really between the Dodge Challenger muscle cars or a really fully tricked out Ram Hemi King Cab pickups. Got to tell you, I can't say that I've ever really faced quite this choice. The Challenger with the rear-wheel drive wouldn't be great if we got snow at elevation, but the Rams were just huge. And kind of trying to think about parallel parking those things in Santa Fe, that would be like an event. So I was going kind of back and forth. I ended up going with the Challenger, though, and just hoping for clear skies. Well, I guess there was one more downside that I didn't discover until we unpacked in our little casita in Santa Fe that night. I'd left my Samsung tablet in that nice United first class seat. Now, not in the seat back pocket. I always check those before leaving. There was actually a side compartment along sort of the middle armrest that I'd put my tablet in when I folded up the table to go hit the lav. Bad mistake. That compartment was deep enough that I sort of lost the tablet in it. I couldn't see it. And I didn't think about checking that before deplaning because it's not kind of part of the usual routine. So once I discovered it was missing, I hit Twitter, sending United a direct message asking about Albuquerque lost and found. I wanted to ping them to see if the cleaning crew had turned anything in since I'd be back at Albuquerque for our Monday morning flight to Las Vegas. Now, I've done this before when getting back, say, coats that I'd left in overhead compartments. The Twitter customer service agent instead sent me a link to a web form to fill out. So I did, and then sort of cooled my jets over the weekend. And then on Monday morning, I swung by the United Baggage Service office to see if they had my tablet. So walk past the American Baggage Service office, open. The Delta Baggage Services office, open. You can see where this is going. The United Baggage Services office closed. It was supposed to open at 9 a.m. I was there at 8:55. I waited around for 15 to 20 minutes. No one showed up. And then I had to head up and catch my Vegas flight. I was not very happy, which, though, changed that afternoon when I got a call from an unknown Cleveland number on my mobile. Now, robocallers have found my mobile number, so I usually let unrecognized numbers just go straight to voicemail. But I remembered that Continental, you know, having a Cleveland hub before the United merger, was thinking, well, I don't know, maybe this is a United person calling. And it was. I have your tablet. Could you verify your screensaver? I told her it was a wall painting of pink flamingos. Yep, that's it. We've got it. And actually, it's street art from Paris's Montmartre neighborhood. You can actually see the picture, my screensaver, on the Travel Commons Instagram feed, if you're so interested. Anyhow, the United woman told me that she said they no longer keep items at the airport. They ship them out the next day to sort of centralize lost and found centers for sorting and processing. So even if the Albuquerque Baggage Services office had been open that morning, they wouldn't have had my tablet. They had shipped it to Cleveland probably that weekend. So after I got off the phone, I got an email like right away with a link to pick a shipping method and payment method. The day after I got home from Vegas, my flamingoed tablet landed on my doorstep. Following up, a couple of listener notes on the last episode. Nick Gassman wrote, when you're talking about car rental collision damage waiver, CDW, I took it to mean that you pay the rental company for the insurance. It's much cheaper, at least in the UK, to purchase this separately. You can generally get it on a per trip or annual basis, just like regular travel insurance. Nick, good point on that. I guess I just get used to accepting the waiver on business travel because for many corporate rates, it's all rolled in or you're just going to expense it. And for U.S. domestic travel, at least for me, my regular auto insurance covers the rental collision damage waiver. So actually all that leaves for me is international travel. Chase actually, like I mentioned in the last episode, Chase did a good job of handling the accident in the U.K. But looking at a separate company actually could be a good idea. I may try that for the next time that I rent in Spain. And Nick continues, and about your Bluetooth speakers, you mentioned about using the Bluetooth speaker, as an accessory for your phone. I assume you know that Jambox can do this. I often used it at work in rooms with no speakerphone. I've also now upgraded to the Bose Mini 2 SoundLink. It's heavier, slightly larger, but when going on holiday, the difference in sound quality is significant and more than makes up for that weight. Well, Nick, yeah, I've actually used the Jambox for many conference calls, though actually I've never checked the quality difference between it and the speaker, or maybe I should say the microphone on my iPhone. I've sort of never swapped between them on a call and then asked the person at the other end which is better. Maybe something to try out on my next call, kind of like when we're waiting for that last straggler to join the conference call. Steve Frick picked up on something when I was talking about notebooks in last episode's Traveler Gift Guide segment. Steve writes, it sounds like you've also entered the fountain pen zone as well. They're like tattoos. You can't just have one. I wouldn't know. I have no tattoos, and I'm trying to keep it that way. But anyhow, Steve keeps writing, I had used a Mont Blanc rollerball that I'd purchased in 1991. It's been broken and repaired several times, and it had been my go-to pen until someone gave me a fountain pen. Now, several years later, I have a collection of fountain pens as well as inks. Ugh, just what I needed. Another obsession. Great episode. Well, Steve, I have to tell you, I have, like I said, not tattoos, but fountain pens. I started on that path with a plastic Waterman fountain pen that I bought many years ago when I was on a business trip to Brussels. And I had just that one pen for the longest time. But then I discovered the internet, or more specifically, fountain pen forums and blogs and podcasts on the internet. And as you might guess, it went downhill pretty quickly. Sometimes I think my biggest decision of the day is which color of ink to use that day, which in and of itself says something about some of my daily choices. I said earlier that I was in Vegas a few weeks back for the big Amazon Web Services convention. It was huge, 50,000 attendees, mostly pudgy, pasty-faced guys, power walking up and down the strip, backpacks strapped down, ignoring the showgirls, offering pictures. Also, they wouldn't be late to say, you know, the sold-out tutorial on the best practices for ingesting streaming data from IoT devices into AWS's new time series database. Definitely something that you want to skip showgirls for. So anyhow, for me, though, the nerd meets baller dichotomy hit one morning at 7:30. I was in a marching nerd stream weaving through the casino floor at the MGM Grand when out from behind a slot machine, a woman with a half-filled plastic glass shouted, "Very impressive that you all have someplace important to go this early." Nobody broke stride. I don't think that many people actually looked over at her. She just sort of shrugged and went back to her machine. There was a lot of walking, though, for that show. It was spread out from the MGM Grand all the way up to the Venetian. The health app on my iPhone clocked me at 10 miles of walking a day. I guess I'm just glad this show wasn't in the summer. Now, I'd mentioned in an earlier episode that I'd found a box of old European currency when cleaning off some shelves. It was from the late 80s, early 90s, the pre-Euro days. I have some Belgian and French franc notes, a Deutschmark, an Irish pound note, and an Italian 1,000 lira note that I've started to use as my bookmark in my notebook. After one of my Amazon sessions, an Italian woman looked over and said, "Oh my God," looking at my lira, pointing at my lira bookmark. "I haven't seen one of those in forever," she said. She talked about her grandparents never really accepting that the lira was gone. "It's good," she said, "that we have the euro, but it'll never be the lira," which, I don't know, remembering back 20 to 30 years ago to what Italy was like, I kind of thought it might be a good thing, but I decided not to say that. Didn't want to break the nostalgia. "I forgot how small it was," she said. You know, I was trading notes with some friends a few weeks back after the Marriott hack was announced. It really, I guess, is no longer a matter of if your personal data will be breached, hacked, stolen, but really just how often. A common theme across actually many of those Amazon talks was that mistakes will happen in your cloud design. So your design should, as they put it, limit the blast radius of those mistakes. So, I started thinking while I was trading these notes, it's like, well, you know, if you apply that same concept to website breaches, be they travel websites or other sort of e-commerce websites, if you're trying to limit the blast radius of a breach, I guess, you know, first of all, I'd freeze all my credit reports and I'd have a unique password for each site, provide just the minimum amount of information required for a transaction. And really, I just wouldn't trust any of these sites to store or save credit card or other information. Indeed, you know, if I really sort of burrowed in, I guess I'd use virtual credit card numbers from a bank that would provide them. I thought, I'm pretty good on all of that, except for the last one. I just haven't found a good bank that easily provides virtual credit card numbers. I guess it all comes down to your personal trade-off point between resilience to a breach, so, you know, how big of a blast radius you're willing to endure versus convenience. I guess that's what it all comes down to. Hey, now on a lighter note, with the the Christmas season officially clicking in the day after Thanksgiving. TBS and TNT, they just seem to have Love Actually, that that kind of ensemble movie from, I don't know, what was it, like the early 2000s with Hugh Grant and a whole bunch of other folks, seem to have that sort of on power rotation every weekend. I kind of like it. It's a good Christmas movie, but, you know, we ended up picking up the end of it one night in Santa Fe while we were just sort of flipping through the channels. I got to tell you, I just couldn't buy that scene, you know, toward the end of the movie when Liam Neeson encourages his stepson to breach Heathrow Airport security in the name of true love. I might be a bit of a Scrooge, but how does a 10-year-old kid commit a serious felony, actually multiple felonies, and not get gang tackled at the gate and then thrown into juvie? I don't know. Maybe I should just stick to A Charlie Brown Christmas. Hey, and if you have any travel rants, questions, a story, comment, travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send it along. The email address is comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com. You can send in an audio comment, a Twitter message to M. Peacock, post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page or the Instagram account at Travel Commons, or just put them up at the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is holiday travel tips. So I posted my kind of annual top 10 holiday travel tips a few weeks back. It feels like something I guess I'm sort of required to do to keep my status as a semi-professional travel blogger and podcaster. You know, not a lot of flying tips have changed over the past few lists. Pay a bit extra to fly nonstop. Don't take a tight connection. Catch an early flight if you can. Carry your luggage on if you can. You know, it's a lot of the same tips. Hasn't changed, I guess. I don't know, maybe because not a lot has changed regarding holiday air travel. I mean, look, it's a time when a huge bubble of travelers hit an infrastructure that is, for the most part, already operating near capacity. And it's at the time of year when much of that capacity could get disrupted by weather. I mean, this year, U.S. plane loads got, I don't know, they hit over 80%, sort of as if you didn't already know that, hearing the constant refrain of gate agents and flight attendants saying, this flight will be completely full. And really, there's been no new airport or runway capacity added in these high traffic areas. I don't know, maybe since O'Hare finished spending $1 billion or so straightening out its runways. I mean, the LaGuardia renovation that's going on now will hopefully kind of eliminate the leaking roof and that third world vibe. But after spending $8 billion, there won't be any new runway capacity. Having said that, I actually think the aggressive rollout of the TSA's PreCheck has helped everyone. That is the TSA, the frequent travelers who've bought PreCheck. And by the way, signing up for PreCheck has moved up to number 2 on this year's tip list. And it's actually even helped the infrequent travelers who haven't bought PreCheck by moving a bunch of people out of their lane. I guess it, you know, if you think about it, it just increases security capacity by increasing throughput, for lack of a better term, velocity through the lines. Security seems to, I think, on the whole, move a bit brisker. Yes, there have been still too many times when it doesn't move fast, but I don't know. It's been a while since we've seen sort of a full-scale TSA meltdown causing people to miss flights. So, you know, bringing your own battery pack cracked the top 10 list for the first time this year. It's in at number 7, following Use Twitter as a Concierge Service and Use Multiple Flight Tracking Apps at number 5 and 6, respectively. You know, I kind of think about it, the more we rely on our smartphones for travel information, the more important power is. And when the holiday travel crowds are hovering around those Samsung and Verizon power towers, you need a power alternative. A lot of top 10 lists that I read end with kind of a second list of those things that didn't quite make the top 10. And for me, some of those are things like travel on the actual holiday. So as I just talked about before, the Thanksgiving flight out to Santa Fe actually reminded me of this tip. It didn't make the top 10 because not everyone could pull it off. Tough to fly or drive out Christmas morning if you've got young kids or if you've got Italian in-laws who do the whole Feast of the Seven Fishes on Christmas Eve. But if you can, it is a quantum-level decrease in travel stress. You'll just probably glide through your travels. Another tip that didn't quite make the top 10, take mass transit to the airport. So everyone worries about the TSA lines, but just getting into the airport to be able to get into the TSA line can be a hassle. Airports with a single access road that go past all the terminals, think of O'Hare, LAX, LaGuardia. I mean, you can have a 10 to 15 minute backup just trying to get up to the terminal. I mean, when construction at LaGuardia first started, the backups were so bad, people were getting out of their cabs when they were still on the Grand Central Parkway and walking up the off ramps. Now, LaGuardia doesn't have mass transit access. Again, some of that $8 billion of spending is for that, but most airports do. O'Hare, Atlanta, Newark and JFK, Washington National. If it's available, use it to skip at least one line. And my last sort of almost made it tip, bring cash. Now, way back in episode 136, that was last December, so a year ago, I talked about what seems to be a generational split. Maybe, you know, I don't know, sort of right around 30 or 35 years old, sort of old millennials, youngster Gen Xs. There seems to be a split right there around the need to carry cash. Now, no matter which side you sit on of that split, it's a fact that cash can get you out of a packed airport bar quicker than a card if you need to bolt for your flight. Maybe a delay got pulled up, your gate got moved to the next terminal, or maybe you just misread the boarding time. Being able to lay down, say, a 20 and three ones on the bar with your check is a whole lot quicker than waiting for the waitress to show back up, take your card, walk to the back to run it, and then bring it back again for you to sign. I mean, this is where the Europeans with those mobile terminals are just sort of light years ahead of the U.S. But until the U.S. catches up, which means we have to be trusted to remember four-digit PIN codes, bring cash so you can dash. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is notes from Santa Fe. As I mentioned earlier, Irene and I headed out to Santa Fe, New Mexico for the Thanksgiving holidays. Since both kids were gone, we figured, hey, why not? And since I had to be in Vegas on Monday, it just made sense to head west. Now, I'm going to do a full write-up on our trip in a blog post in, I don't know, probably a week or so. It's going to be like the first of a new series I'm thinking about called Road Trips. So posts where we kind of break the Travel Commons format a bit. Road trip posts will be more about the destination than the journey. Things we did, places we stayed, ate, drank beer. But here, you know, just some notes. It had been a while since we'd been to Santa Fe. Maybe 10 years. I haven't paged back through my calendar to check, but getting out of that Dodge Challenger from Hertz that we'd blasted up I-25, the speed limit is 75 once you get outside of Albuquerque, I was immediately hit with the pinon smell. It's a unique pinewood smoke smell that I only get in Santa Fe. And I've been around a lot of pinewood fires in, say, Colorado, Arizona. But the pinon smoke kind of billowing out of those Kiva fireplaces, it's a unique smell, and it's one that I love. Visiting Santa Fe, there's always been an interesting mix of highbrow and lowbrow. Doing the sort of Georgia O'Keeffe Museum and a run-up Canyon Road through all the art galleries on the highbrow end, or hunting the best green chili cheeseburger and then burning it off on a hike in the Sangre de Cristo Mountains at the lowbrow end. And I got to tell you, this visit was all lowbrow. Friday, we did about 1,700 vertical feet up the Atalaya Trail. The parking lot at the trailhead at St. John's College was pretty full, but the trail wasn't crowded once we got going. It actually came in handy at times to see people, let us know we weren't lost. There were some trail markings, but really not to the extent that we're used to in, say, the UK. 5.5 hours later, up, down, we end up sitting at a bar at Second Street Brewing's place in the Rail Yard District, replacing whatever calories we'd burned off on that 1,700-foot foot hike with a green chili cheeseburger and a side of green chili cheese fries. Double lashing of American cheese, which I know it's not a real cheese. It's a processed cheese food. But I got to tell you, that creamy gooiness of it, that's a great thing about American cheese. It really melts well. It blended well with that chili bite. And then a pint of, I think Second Street Brewing delivers a pint of really one of the better American-made bitters that I've had. Saturday, after hiking through Tent Rock National Monument, we ended up on Guadalupe Street, which feels sort of like the lowbrow counterpart to, say, the Plaza or Canyon Road. We stopped at Cowgirl Barbecue for margaritas. Now, during our last visit, you know, 10, 12, however many years ago, I kind of borrowed their margarita recipe for my own, as my friends call it, a margarita. So sitting there, a little bit of nostalgia, we worked through their margarita menu. It was still pretty good. While listening to a group of local guys sitting kind of in the corner underneath a TV set talking about taking dancing lessons. That was an interesting conversation. And then next to us, a woman at the bar was talking to us about, you know, back in the 70s when she'd moved to Santa Fe from New York, cowboys still rode horses through town, across the plaza, down Canyon Road, throwing cash down on Canyon Road bars to buy rounds for the house. On Sunday, we walked down Canyon Road, looking into the sculpture gardens of all the art galleries, kind of going a little highbrow. It seemed a popular Sunday morning stroll. I'd see a couple of older couples as going through, you know, kind of older than me, maybe, say, at the beginning of their retirement. And they were kind of walking, dressed in sort of high-end Western garb, kind of nice flat-brimmed hats, fur-trimmed duster coats, kind of a sort of California money does cowboy look. Be interesting to see kind of how those 70s cowboys would fit into Canyon Road today. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons Podcast number 147. I hope you all enjoyed the show. I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Check out the show notes for music links. You can always find us on SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Alexa, iTunes, Spotify. The links, along with the RSS feeds for all you pasty-faced nerds out there, are on the right-hand side of the Travel Commons website under the heading Subscribe. And then right below that, in the social media section, are links to the Travel Commons Facebook page and Twitter and Instagram feeds. If you've got a story, thought, comment, gripe, moans, groans, cries of anguish, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio file, comment, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, and Peacock on Twitter, the Travel Commons page on Facebook, the Instagram feed, or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone, Nick, Steve, everybody else who's taken time to send in emails, tweets, and post comments on the website. Hoping that that your travels this holiday are safe, uncrowded, and that you just glide through to your destination. Until we talk again in the new year, take care. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.